And there is some sense there's a little more pleasure, I guess. So just with focusing on what it was that I was eating.
So more enhanced sensations and a little bit more pleasure in the sensations of eating. Thank you. Anyone else try the eating meditation? Anyone else willing to admit they tried the eating? Yes, yes.
Yeah, I tried it. Again, I found it like the teeth brushing meditation. It's a lot harder to do that than the sitting meditation. Sitting meditation is not easy, but at least for a little while I can focus.
Yeah.
Real world stuff, it seems like within seconds you're off and away.
Yeah, you can be, because it's such a habit to be going off. So yeah, it can be much more challenging, but I'd encourage you to keep trying it little bits at a time, because it does really help our mindfulness, and it helps our life to be able to start to bring the attention into our daily life. So I'd encourage you to just keep trying. It doesn't really matter that it's not successful all the time. So. But just keep trying. That's the most important part. How about the trying to find an activity that kind of occurred regularly in the day and just noticing, like walking through doors or turning on light switches? I think I recommended a few things. Anybody try any of that? Anybody?
Yeah, I tried to change the doors again. It's very patchy. It will be a little patch where I remember to do it, and then maybe a whole day when I space out.
Yep, that's the way it goes. Yep.
I also realize how many doors you go through.
How many doors? Yes. Another thing that Gil likes to talk about in terms of paying attention and going through doors is that you're in a new space when you go into a door, so it's kind of a good time to pay attention. You know, it's like you've entered a new space, so what's happening?
I find that I do much better when I'm meditating and trying to stay in a location that I'm not familiar with.
Mm. Yeah, so coming here, it works. But is there someplace else, like you can go to a park or something? And
actually, I work at the airport, and there's a meditation room there.
Oh.
So no one knows about it, which is obscure location. I just happened to stumble into it, and so I've been going in there.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and that's a great thing to do, to find some place at work where you can take a short break like that. It's really helpful in the middle of your day, I find, you know, to take a short time. You can even do it at your desk, you know, 5 minutes, just sit at your desk and close your eyes and just pay attention to your breathing. Thank you. Yeah, it's fairly common, I think, for people to be very distracted by their home environment. But again, you might just try it at times, and it will, especially as it gets more into your body. You know, with the practice at work, it will get more familiar. The process of the meditation will become more familiar, and it'll become something associated with the body more than the place. And so after some time, it may get easier to do at your home, too. Any other comments about the week, about any of the practice? Any questions about the meditation itself? Paying attention to sensations of the body?
I did find one word practice, which is kind of interesting, is the thing you could download for your computer called the mindful clock. Basically, things every hour, and I've been doing that for several months. And actually, it's kind of nice, especially with a lot of technology jobs where you spend a lot of time on the screen, time becomes very fluid. It can be an hour or 12, it seems to hardly be different. But if you're something that's reminding you every hour that you're at your desk, to come back.
Is it a pretty nice sounding bell?
They actually have several different varieties. They sound the bell just like that. I forgot exactly where I found it, but I put in mindful clock, and like in Yahoo, and then it comes up there. I actually got it through the Center for Mindful Living. It's kind of a link thing that through 12 stages you find this thing, but it's actually the day is both shorter and longer in one because I'm more present.
So how have you been working with this bell? I mean, just
it's my stop and I stop my breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And it moves only 3 breaths. At least it's 3 breaths.
That's great. Yeah, it is. It's at least 3 breaths. I definitely concur with you there. It's really helpful to have those moments, even if it's just once an hour. So that's wonderful. That's a great suggestion. I'm going to look that up myself.
And it also has a timer, so you can use it as your meditation timer. So you can click on it and say, hey, I want to do 20 minute meditation.
Mm-hmm. If you don't mind the sound of your computer fan. Anything else? Yeah.
Well, I was just amazed that when I did stop, how tight my face was, how I was grimacing all the time. I didn't even know that. I just
when you were stopping in the middle of the day. Did it help you to relax it?
Yeah, right. Yes, it did. But then the next time,
It's through habit we do these things. So, but just even if we just notice that it's happening, automatically there's a kind of a letting go of it. You're just like, there's all that tension, and it's just like the body. Well, as soon as it's noticed, the body can let go of it. So it's helpful to simply notice it. You don't even have to try to let go of it sometimes. It just lets go of itself. And then you notice it again and again and again. Yeah. Thank you. So tonight we're going to do mindfulness of emotions. And so we'll start with a guided meditation, and about 20 minutes we'll do again. So get yourself into a reasonably comfortable, upright, and alert posture. See if you can balance yourself and relax around the balanced uprightness of your spine. And gently close your eyes. Take a moment to just check in with yourself. How are you right now? Just a brief moment. What kind of mood are you experiencing? And then take a couple of long, slow, deep breaths. Connecting to the body on the in-breath and letting go, relaxing on the out-breath. Now let your breathing return to normal. And take a few moments to scan through your body, letting go of any obvious tension that you find. So if you notice tension, let it go, relax, and move on to the next area of your body. Let go, relax. And now gently let yourself open to sounds. Take in the experience of hearing. Sounds in the room. Distant sounds. Sounds outside. Soft sounds. Obvious sounds. Just let them wash over you as if you were listening to music. Now bring your attention gently into the body and become aware of the sensations that let you know that you're breathing. Take an interest in how the breathing affects the body. What parts of your body move, expand, contract as a result of the breathing. if some other physical sensation becomes more predominant than the breathing, you can let go of the breathing and bring your attention to that physical experience. The sound, the pain, pressure, as long as it's more predominant than the sensations of breathing, let go of the breathing and attend to that until it's no longer so compelling. And then just gently come back to the sensations of breathing. If you notice the mind is wandering or thinking, as much as possible, let go of the story, the thoughts, and gently come back to the sensations in the body, the sensations of breathing. Now I'd like to suggest that you gently let yourself become aware of how you're feeling emotionally. What mood or state of mind is present for you. It might be obvious, or it might be subtle. You might be calm or impatient, sad, happy, irritated, delighted, anxious, contented, frustrated, bored, peaceful, numb, upbeat, flat, enlivened, indifferent, amused. Just notice what mood is present. Softly acknowledge its presence and see if you can allow it to be there with an accepting attitude. Give it permission to be here, whatever it is. Explore in your body what sensations in the body accompany this emotion. Is there a physical correlate for the emotion? Perhaps in the head, the heart, the torso, the face, the hands. If so, bring attention to the physical aspect of the emotion. Rest in the physical sensation itself. As you stay present for the mood or emotion, keep track of what happens to it as you pay attention to it. Does it get stronger, weaker, feel bigger or smaller? It doesn't matter how it changes. What matters for mindfulness practice is simply that you notice how it changes. If the emotion goes away, just see what the next most obvious emotion is. and letting go of attention to the mood or emotion for the last couple of minutes of the sitting, let your attention return to the sensations of breathing. See how thoroughly you can let your attention be present for the breath. So it doesn't matter what object we use to cultivate our mindfulness practice with. Gil likes to use the analogy about mindfulness being like sharpening a knife. It doesn't matter what kind of whetstone we use to sharpen the knife with. What matters is that the knife stays in contact with the stone. So that contact, that continuity of attention is really the important part. What my teacher in Burma liked to use an example of rubbing. He said that mindfulness is like rubbing a bowl. That contact of rubbing the bowl with the soft cloth is the kind of quality we should have with our mindfulness. That contact, that continuous rubbing quality. So that's really the crucial part. It doesn't much matter what object we use to cultivate that quality of staying in contact. So we can be pretty comfortable being in contact with the sensations of breathing, but then not be so experienced in paying attention to emotion. And if a strong emotion comes up, we can get swept off in a storm of anger or frustration. If we haven't cultivated the practice of paying attention to those kinds of things. So in this practice that I'm leading you through in these weeks, we learn slowly over the course of the weeks to pay attention to all aspects of our experience, including our bodily sensations, our emotions, and even our thoughts. Next week we'll start to talk about our thoughts. So this week we'll talk a little bit more about how to pay attention to emotions in our experience and in our meditation. At one point, the Buddha was talking to his followers and he said, "An enlightened person feels pleasant sensation, unpleasant sensation, and neutral sensation. And likewise, an everyday ordinary person feels pleasant sensation, unpleasant sensation, and neutral sensation. So what's the difference between these two types of people? And his followers said, tell us. And he said, when an ordinary person feels painful sensation, they beat their breast and wail and sorrow and grieve and moan. So having felt the painful sensation, they add another unpleasant sensation to it, the mental reactivity. He said it's as if you had been stabbed by a dart and then took another dart and stabbed again. That the second dart makes the whole situation more painful. He said when an enlightened person feels an unpleasant sensation, they feel an unpleasant sensation. It stops there. There's no subsequent reactivity to that unpleasant sensation. So this is the story of reactivity. Life will contain a certain amount of difficult experience, unpleasant sensation. There's not much we can do about that. Our bodies are constructed, in fact, to produce unpleasant sensations in certain circumstances. But we typically react to the unpleasant sensation. So, for example, if you cut yourself with a knife, there's that unpleasant sensation of being cut by the knife, which is what the body is supposed to do. It's kind of a warning system, so there's that unpleasant sensation. But most of us wouldn't stop with that. We'd start berating ourselves for, how could I be so stupid as to not see the knife was going to slip into my finger? So we start adding some reactivity to it. And most of us don't even stop there. We get angry at ourselves for being mad at ourselves. We get hurt because we're feeling angry at ourselves. We just keep kind of adding reaction on top of reaction. So that reactivity is the second arrow, the second dart that the Buddha was talking about. And in spite of what we may think or how we have lived our lives, that reactivity is not necessary. It's optional. Gill likes to talk about optional suffering. And the reactivity qualifies as that. It doesn't feel optional, but through bringing our attention to our sensations and our reactions to them, we can actually start noticing when that reactivity begins. We can start noticing that movement of the mind away from the actual experience towards a reaction. And in that moment, there's a choice. We have a choice. There's a possibility of freedom from that reactivity. We can even, through mindfulness, learn to catch the reactivity right before it starts. That we see, we can kind of see an inclination in the mind to react and choose to not go there. In fact, what often happens is that in seeing that inclination, we would notice, oh, I'm getting ready. I'm moving into anger. That's what the mind kind of wants to do, is get angry. And noticing that, sometimes if we have experienced the anger itself directly enough times, the body seems to automatically know that that movement of the mind towards anger is going to bring us suffering. And it will let go of it as if you were letting go of a hot pot that you were grasping on the stove. It'll just automatically let go because it sees it's headed in a direction that will cause suffering. So understanding the cycle of reactivity is important as we start to pay attention to emotions, because often emotions are born out of reactivity. They can be born out of reactivity to physical sensations, as I talked about just a moment ago with cutting ourselves with a knife. Or sometimes emotions can also be built on top of other emotions, as I mentioned also, with the reaction to the reaction to the reaction. Sometimes emotions come up and they're just welling up because we're happy, or there's there's a beautiful sky and we're happy to see the beautiful sky. And sometimes we don't necessarily even stop with that kind of emotion. We can react to that kind of emotion as well. So noticing how we react to our experience is really helpful in starting to pay attention to emotions. Most people have some sort of sense that certain emotions are acceptable and certain emotions are not acceptable. So, for instance, anger. A lot of us might be taught that it's not necessarily appropriate to be angry. And so we resist our anger, or we feel like we're bad for being angry. So that's the form of reactivity. That's a form of reactivity. The anger can just come up because of a particular situation, and then we resist it or we fight it somehow. Likewise with positive emotions like love, for instance. Sometimes we can fight those or resist those as well. If I had a situation where I was in a relationship where I felt more for the man than he felt for me, and I fought for a long time with those feelings. I fought with them. It's like, oh, these feelings aren't appropriate. And when I finally just let go and said, well, what am I afraid of? I mean, why not feel these feelings? And what happened was it just opened into a sense of pure metta for that person, a loving kindness for him, with no need for anything to return. Just feeling that pure sense of the heart wanting to open and connect. So we can resist all kinds of emotions. So in mindfulness practice, when emotions become predominant, we let ourselves let go of whatever our primary object is, usually the breath, and bring our attention to the emotion. And we try to do that in as non-reactive a way as possible. But of course, we are going to react to our emotions. There's practically no way around that. So if you notice that you're reacting to an emotion, you don't have to judge yourself for it. That's yet another reaction, that judging. So just let it go with noticing, oh, yeah, I'm reacting. We don't have to add yet more emotions and reactivity on top of that. In mindfulness practice, the key is to just wake up with whatever is happening right now. That may be with the sixth arrow, it may be with the 16th arrow, it may be with the 106th arrow. It doesn't matter. Just wake up for whatever we're experiencing and bring our presence attention to it. There's no need to like kind of try to track back and say, well, where did this all start from? We just notice where we are. And as I said a few moments ago, mindfulness can develop to the point where we notice that initial movement of reactivity. We see a thought arise in the mind, and we notice an inclination to get wrapped up in the emotion about that thought. A picture of a dear friend who did something to hurt us comes into our mind, and we immediately have these conflicting emotions of the sense of loving the friend and being angry at them just because that thought of that person arose in our mind. We can see that movement. We can see that movement from that thought arising to that emotional response. But the task of mindfulness is always to just wake up where you are. If you are waking up in the midst of that confusing, conflicting emotion, that's what you bring your attention to. You don't try to go back to the thought or back to what was happening before it. Just wake up where you are. Start where you are. We need to take care, though, that we don't use this idea of accepting emotions to indulge in emotion. So the idea of the mindful acceptance is a very spacious, open container, but not one that clings to the emotion. So if we're experiencing anger, for instance, the mindfulness of the anger isn't an excuse to sit there and feed it and just become more and more angry. It really is an invitation to turn the attention back onto what is it to be angry? What is the experience of anger itself? And just rest in that chaotic, unpleasant experience. That sounds like it might be a contradiction in terms to rest in chaos. but it's actually, it's possible. And you may find with some practice that it does feel like rest. It does feel like rest because it has eliminated a kind of a layer of strife in the mind to actually bring our attention to what is happening while it's happening. So in mindfulness practice, we practice a middle way with respect to emotions. We don't repress them, and nor do we act on them. We don't try to deny them, and nor do we act them out. With mindfulness, we just let the emotion take its own course in our bodies and minds. Whatever emotion has appeared, we simply let it take its natural course. So one of the best ways to do this is to feel the emotion in the body, to pay attention to the immediacy of the physical experience of how the emotion is impacting the body. That helps to take us away from the thoughts that are arising around the emotion, the narrative that's accompanying the emotion. Very often there's some kind of stream of thoughts going on when an emotion is present. And that stream of thoughts tends to fuel the emotion. And if we can disengage from that stream of thoughts, it's very helpful in terms of the ability to be non-reactively present for the emotion. And the body serves as a wonderful container for that. So most emotions do have a physical correlate. Especially strong emotions will have some kind of a physical expression in the body. Anger, for instance, you may have a feeling of heat and contraction in the chest or in the throat. And fear, you might feel a kind of contraction or quivering in the stomach. Joy might be a feeling of very delightful, uplifting bubbles in the body. So what we want to do with mindfulness of emotions, the first and foremost thing we need to do is disengage from whatever we think is causing the emotion. So for instance, if we're angry, typically where our attention is focused when we're angry is on the person or thing or situation we're angry at. We're focused outwards on whatever has happened. We're thinking about that thing, we're thinking about the person, we're thinking about what he or she said, what I said, how I'm going to say this. It's a whole huge, you know, construction in the mind. And what we do is we turn our attention away from that construction, away from the outward place where we think the anger is located, and into the physical and mental experience of emotion in our body. What is it like to be a human being that's angry? Just bring the attention inside. So it's turning the mirror around and looking at what is the experience of anger. So emotions actually want to be experienced. That's, I think, partly why they're so compelling to us, that they grab us, and it's like they're saying, pay attention to me, you know, you've got to figure this out. But the way that we've learned to deal with emotions typically is to go over the narrative and the thoughts over and over again, as if somehow that's going to fix the problem by thinking about it and revising all of the different scenarios. So if you turn your attention into the body itself, turn the mirror around and bring the attention to the experience of the emotion itself, the emotion has a chance to live its own life, essentially, to stay for a while and then to disappear. All experiences have this quality of appearing, staying for a while, and disappearing. Emotions are no exception. And you may find with emotions that they tend to kind of repeat, that you'll find an anger, for example, where the thought of a person comes into your mind that you're angry at, and the emotion of anger arises, and then it will last for some time and then it will disappear. And what we tend to think that it's kind of just submerged, that it's really still there. The anger is really still underneath there somewhere, because the next time that thought comes in, we're angry all over again. So we feel like the anger is always there. But when you start to pay attention with mindfulness, you discover that that's not true. The emotion actually disappears. It actually disappears at some point. And it is reconstructed all over again at some point in the future when the conditions come together, when that thought appears and we have all those memories of that anger. The anger is reconstructed all over again. It's born, it stays for a while, and it disappears. That's the way all of our experience is. So when we bring our mindful attention to our emotions, they have a chance to live this life. They have a chance to naturally be there for a while and disappear. What we typically do is we feed them, so they actually tend to stay around for longer than, especially these afflictive emotions, the ones that cause us the most suffering in our life, the anger, the fear, the depression, the hostility, all of these we tend to feed with our thoughts.